Well, I'm about halfway through an absolutely beautiful book, a story of love and grief and recovery and what it is to find yourself in the midst of a great deal of emotional turmoil. It is called Finding Jim by Susan Oakey Baker, about her first husband, Jim Haberl, and she joins us now on the phone. Hello, Susan. How are you?
Hi, Mike. I'm great. How are you?
Good. Thank you for joining us. You know, let's set the table a little bit. And I guess the first thing we should talk about, people have probably heard your first husband's name before, but tell us a little bit about your first husband. He's a legend in the climbing community.
Yes, he was. He grew up in Vancouver and went to Prince of Wales High School. And he was an international mountain guide. And he was the first Canadian to summit K2, which is the second highest mountain in the world and the most difficult.
How did you two meet? I mean, you go through it in the story. I guess maybe explain how the book is written, because the first part of the book is very much about your relationship and you know, your path to falling in love, I guess.
It is, yeah. We first met when I was 16 in the Queen Charlotte Islands, and we connected again when I was 26. And then we spent years sort of traveling the world and going on all sorts of adventures, backcountry skiing and climbing and that sort of thing. And so it is, it's a story of us falling in love. And it's also a story of how our travels in the wilderness helped us to create that intimate bond, I guess, between us.
Well, and it's so interesting when you're reading the book, because like any relationship, when you're first falling in love, it was very much a negotiation about, you know, and when you're marrying someone who is focused on mountains, I mean, obviously that comes with a really interesting sort of price, even though that was something you were extremely enthusiastic about. I mean, you know, he's going away for weeks at a time and doing something very dangerous. Did you ever feel that sensation when you were falling in love with Jim Haberl?
I did, because it wasn't long after we sort of got serious that he went to K2. And I have to say, I was a bit more oblivious. You know, I'm not a high-end mountaineer, and the adventures that we went on were often out of my comfort zone. And I was learning a lot and learning how to face fear. And Jim was on a different level that way. And I remember feeling when he went to K2, my dad, I was driving him to the airport in Seattle, and my dad hugged him. And I thought, you know, and he's just pretty staunch Brit. He's a lovely guy, my dad, but yeah. It was a bit surprising. And then afterwards, the story on K2 is Jim's partner, his climbing partner, dies on the way down.
Yeah.
And when I called to tell my dad, he said, well, he said, I'm not really that surprised. I knew there was a good chance we weren't going to see Jim again. And that was a real shock for me. You know, I didn't actually realize the extent of the risk. And then as I became more aware of the risk of being in the outdoors and the risk of climbing big mountains, really,
yeah.
You know, the 8,000 meters. Yes, we sort of had a come to Jesus talk at some point when we were, you know, getting serious about getting married and having children. And it was clear to me that I couldn't handle that, him climbing 8,000 meter peaks and raising a family together. So, but he had decided on his own that he didn't want to go back to 8,000 meter peaks.
Well, and the amazing thing is your father's pragmatism is very much matched in the mountaineering community when it comes to, you know, what you're facing when you're going up a mountain. I mean, Jim seemed, at least the way that you talk about him and portray him in the book, he was very pragmatic about what it is that he was doing every day when he went out on a mountain.
Yeah, he always acknowledged the luck factor. You know, I think for a lot of mountaineers, actually planning for the expedition and trying to minimize the risk is a big draw. You know, it's like a puzzle, trying to put it all together and figure out, okay, what's the best way to do this so that I won't get hurt or killed? And those consequences are dire, too. You know, that warrants a real focus and really cleaning of the mental slate and the singular focus on making this happen. And so when he went out, he always talked about, yep, I can minimize the risk as much as I can. Then there's lady luck that plays a factor. And I think also, too, he was, you know how we always battle with our reason and our emotion when we're making decisions and in life. And somehow Jim, he found a balance between the two. He made his decisions not just based on reason, but he also used his heart. and that might sound a bit corny, but he was connected in a way that I think allowed him to make some really good decisions out there.
We're speaking with Susan Okie Baker about her beautiful book called Finding Jim. Now, you've talked a lot about Jim, and I think maybe people have some understanding of perhaps a little bit about who he was as a man and his motivations. I don't even know how to ask this question, Susan. I mean, you know, I think everybody has a certain experience with tragedy, but the day that you found out that someone that you were so deeply in love with died, I can't imagine how you get up the next day. And that's really where the book soars, I think, for me. Tell me about your decision to put this out there in the public.
I think it's been a long journey writing this book. You know, it took me 7 years to finish it. And I realized after Jim was killed, I started writing in a journal. And I was writing letters to him every day. And I did that for 2 years. And I think that was a way of keeping connected to him and keeping some forward momentum of some sort.
Yeah.
And then when I met my present husband, Joe, and we have a 7-year-old son, Sam, now, you know, but I felt more grounded in a present, I guess, I decided to put the journals into book form or write a book, craft a book. And initially, I think I wanted some purpose. I wanted to regain some purpose in life. And this seemed like a good thing to do. There's another author I love, Neil Gaiman. And
of course,
he says, when things go bad in life, make good art. And that was sort of what I was trying to do, I think. You know, it's such a deeply human act to create something. And so to create a book that not only would be cathartic for me, you know, putting my words down and actually trying to make sense of the tragedy, but also to feel like, okay, maybe this will be helpful. Maybe this shared experience will be helpful. And when I was grieving, I read books. You know, it felt like a lonely process as much as I had a lot of support around me, family and friends, very loving support. It's a lonely process, and I would read these books. There's one by C.S. Lewis, A Grief Observed, and A Year of Magical Thinking, and these wonderful books that I felt like, okay, not quite so alone in the process. And so I was hoping that this also, this shared experience would help some other people.
Well, and Susan, there's an interesting aspect to it in that, you know, we all think that we spend a lot of time finding who we are and finding ourselves and discovering what it is that gives us purpose in life. But you realize through reading your book that that can come untethered very quickly, and you have to start the process again. And the book, very much after Jim passes away, after he dies in the avalanche, that process started again for you, didn't it? I mean, day to day to day.
Yes, it did. I mean, I felt like everything fell away, and that there was this small core, a small flame or something inside that I had to rediscover and fan to bring to life again. And that it felt like such a fragile thing, you know, something that needed to be very much protected and nurtured back to life. And I guess that's when we find how strong we are. That's when we find how resilient we are. And I really think I've never felt more vulnerable than when I was grieving. You know, I've been on rock ledges, and I've felt like, you know, I was maybe going to hurt myself or die. But holy smokes, when that happened, I just felt like I was absolutely naked right down to the core.
How did you start?
So yes, it was a total rebuilding.
So what was
total rebuilding?
What was the start for you, Susan, of that process? I mean, you know, with the book, it goes after, you know, from day to day, then it goes week to week, then it starts going to places that had meaning in your life between yourself and Jim, and you sort of travel around. But what was the process? I mean, can you put it into words? I guess that's the book, but
I don't know. I sometimes think of other people or movies and stuff like Forrest Gump. You know, when he goes through his grief, he goes on a run and he runs to the Atlantic Ocean and back.
Right,
you know,
yeah.
It seems like we often go on pilgrimage when we're faced with adversity. And I think
right.
That was my pilgrimage. It was just my feet sort of following my heart until my soul caught up with the truth. And the truth was that Jim was dead, and my life as I knew it no longer existed. And so I took comfort in going to those places that we shared, because it rekindled memories and it was soothing. It was comforting. And at the same time, it was also a building on the truth that he was no longer there. I would go to these places searching for him or searching for this feeling and come back thinking, okay, I sort of got that feeling, but he's still not here.
Yeah.
You know, he's still dead.
Well, and that whole process gave you the opportunity to heal to the point where you were open to other people, to other experiences, to love, and finding, you know, your second husband and child and, you know, all these things. It just, I don't know, but I guess you can never put Jim aside, can you? I mean, he's always there. He's part of you. He's your experience.
I think you're right. I mean, I'm very much a person. I like life to go tickety-boo. You know, if I could wrap it all up neatly in a present, I would.
Good British pragmatism.
And I've had to let go of that. And I've had to let go of, you know, feeling like, okay, I should be better. I shouldn't be in this place. I should be farther along than this. I shouldn't be crying at our anniversary anymore. I shouldn't be doing this. And I really wanted a manual. And I've come to the conclusion, you know, that you get used to it.
Right.
You get used to the grief, and you get used to living with it, and you get better at the pain. And I think that in my urban life or in my normal life, I can avoid a lot of pain. You know, I don't come out of my comfort zone that much. But life is full of pain, you know.
Yeah.
And I think learning to deal with it is, it's just the way life is.
Bumps
so, yeah,
and bruises.
Jim is always there, yeah.
Well, beautiful. The book is absolutely gorgeous. I'm really enjoying it. I'm looking forward to finishing it. It is called Finding Jim by Susan Oakey Baker. Susan, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks, Mike.
All right, really appreciate it. You've got it on The Shift on CKNW News Talk 980.